I've been thinking more and more about this question of the spiritual, but not religious. The spiritual, but not religious. I don't know if this lands in your bucket, if you've read about this, but a quick windshield tour is that years ago in the annual Pew Charitable Trust survey around religious life in America, there began the advent of what's called the nuns, N-O-N-E's, not N-U-N's, N-O-N-E's. And the N-O-N-E's were people that said none of the above. Like, which religious affiliation did you have? And it was nuns. And I can't remember, it was about 15 or so years ago, and the line crossed where we had more nuns than we had people that identified with organized religion. And so the Pews, the researchers reframed some of the questions to come up with like what's going on. And so they basically introduced a new category called the spiritual. You know, people, in other words, that identify with there being a God, but they don't identify with that through organized religion. They identify with the sacred, but not through a community. And so it's really interesting to think about, like, what is going on with, why is that the case? And in fact, this number is so much that it's 1 in 5 Americans now identify as being spiritual, but not religious. So we're not talking about a little group of people. It's a huge section. I wonder, so what is the case? I think the easy answer is this. Is that not every church is as great as St. Mark's? Sorry. Not that we're keeping score, but it's true. So anyway, I rest my case. Anyway, so, but what is going on here, right? And that is something that we should hold up, right? Our community does defy a lot of these trends. Our community does defy these sort of meta-religious trends. But there's other reasons, right? Like, culturally, we're as busy as ever. Anybody over the last couple weeks has felt this, especially if you have little kids, with being either out with the flu or the norovirus. We've had 40% of our family go down at different times. Or just the fact that we can't go to school. My son Fred has gone to school 8 days since January 6th. 8 days! I mean, and it's crazy. And then you all of a sudden find yourself in that mode where your life is still busy and you got to go to work and you got to do things and you feel like you're doing what? Everything at about 50%, 60%. You're like, if I could just make it through today. Some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's just been, that's part of it, right? Like, come Sunday, we're just pancaked. You know, like, I sometimes joke, and I'm being serious about this, is that, it's a miracle for people to get out of bed and come to church because you're pancaked, right? Life is just hectic and busy. I was talking to a friend of mine in Denver, and they're a very athletic-oriented family. This weekend alone, they had 8 basketball games, 2 volleyball games, a swim meet, and they were going to take their kids skiing, and they had 4 birthday parties. That was in 2 days! That's like a month worth of activities, right? But they're not alone. And I know that, right? And whether you have young kids or whether you have grandkids or whether you're just negotiating a new phase in your lifespan, things are just busy all the time. So we need grace even more than we ever needed it, right? We need grace more than we ever need it. But sometimes that Sunday morning just seems like it's better in bed with a cup of Joe. Paradoxically, of course, church should be the place that you come to get the grace and the rest. And by the way, you're welcome to bring your coffee to church. Just don't spill it. But the other reason is like our mental health categories, right? Our mental health categories are through the roof by every metric across the board. I had a friend not too long ago, and in his bigger group of friends, they experienced a suicide of a early 40-year-old young man who was just really depressed and didn't have had a new wife and just didn't feel like he had any way out. And that was how he had written in his note. And sadly, it's become an all too common part of the obituary scene, is young people taking their lives. We live in a world that is just cascading down all the time. And one of the reasons is that churches have failed to connect with people in these places of need, in these places of tiredness, in these places of hurt, in these places of maladies, of health maladies, or of mental health struggles. The researcher Brené Brown, who's done some incredible research around church and their relationship with people, she's come up with this idea that the drip, drip, drip of judgment in churches leads to shame and leads to trauma and pushes people out of our red doors. Now, I'm speaking about the church writ large here. This is what her research has shown. And many of us have felt that in one way or the other, right? Where we felt that judgment eye of church, or not feeling like we're able to come in because we don't have it all put together, but our neighbors have it all put together and we don't know where to turn to. In other words, we bring our hurts through these doors and we need to connect with other people and with a community that also have these hurts. But many times that's just hard because we're people. And so I don't have any definitive answers to these problems I'm laying out other than everybody should just come to St. Mark's. And I mean that, actually. But deeper than that, I don't think that church people try to do this. Right, I don't think people ever, if you've ever felt judged or shamed in a church or even here, I don't think anybody's intentionally tried to do that. I don't. I think it's just part and parcel to our complicated human self. You know, we take the gospel, we take these teachings from Jesus, and we just complicate them. We can't help it. Years ago, we were going to start the Nut of the Month Club. Peanut nut, okay? Peanut nut, just to be clear where I'm going here. But the Peanut of the Month Club, and this is when I had the catalog business. Oh my God, my business partner Gray and I were so excited about this. We took a half a page of our mail order catalog, 32 pages, so it was a lot of real estate. And if anybody's ever produced a catalog, it's crazy expensive, so that's a lot of real estate. And we mailed like about 500,000 of them at this time in our business. So it was a lot of, you know, a lot of energy. And we had this grid, and it was awesome. It was like, on March, if you selected the A plan, you got cashews. And in June, you would get your chocolate-covered brittle. I mean, it was like crazy good. You could select A, B, C, or D. I mean, it was awesome. We were so excited. 8 people signed up. 8. We're like, but we sold peanuts by like literally the truckload. The next year, like, let's give it one more try, but let's just make it a throwaway. One line, Peanut of the Month Club. Hundreds of subscribers. Hundreds. We complicated it, the daggone thing. People don't need a grid. They want to know what you know, the business guru Covey says, keep the main thing the main thing. Right? Keep it lined out. We don't need to overly complicate it. But we do it, don't we? We still go back and complicate things. Well, in many ways, today, in the Sermon on the Plain, Jesus gets rid of complexity. And he boils down where God's favor, where God's blessing is. He cuts to the heart of the matter of the gospel. Two things come out of this idea and how he cuts through the complexity. First, he literally cuts through it by coming down. Did you notice the beginning of that text? Jesus comes down. This the corresponding to the Sermon on the Plain, this corresponding text is in Matthew, which is the Sermon on the Mount. Many of you recognize that. So that's Jesus teaching from up on the mountain and teaching down. Here, the text tells us that Jesus comes down to be with the people. He doesn't stay up. One scholar writes, in this action, Jesus physically enacts his spiritual mission in the gospel. He goes down to the people that are hurting, that are broken, that are in need of healing, that are suffering. And he stands on the same level as them. He's teaching them, surely, yes. But he is with them so they don't feel alone. And if anybody has ever suffered, which is everybody, we know that one of the most important things in those places of pain is, are you alone or not? To have somebody just with you, holding your hand in the ER, holding your hand when you're receiving a diagnosis, holding your hand when your head is stressed out beyond belief because of the cascading information, just to feel like you are not alone, makes all the difference in the world. So before Jesus has even opened his mouth, he's already worked the gospel in their lives by coming to be with them as a friend, as St. Luke the other said in our children's homily. It's a total reminder then that we don't have a hierarchy in our faith. We have Jesus who's with us. As we like to say, all are equal in the eyes of God, and the ground is level at the foot of the cross. Second, God's love and grace does not work the way of the world. Thanks be to God. The blessings are on the poor and on those that weep, on those that are outcasted, those that feel othered, those that feel left out. The blessings occur, in other words, in places that the world looks at as weakness. Blessings happen in places of suffering and of weakness, in places that are looked down upon by the world. And that's where Jesus takes this even further. And perhaps it's the hinge of the whole text. Here he is coming down off the mountain, being with them. And he says, blessing are you that feel even left out or ashamed or condemned or pushed away. In other words, he takes the blessings to the places of deep fracture within all of our lives. Because the irony of the places of deep fracture is that this is the place that the world rejects, but is the place that God makes holy and sacred, bringing love and grace and mercy, pouring his blessing into these places of pain. Martin Luther said, no one can escape suffering, for it is part of the human condition. Now, we know this, don't we? Luther goes on to say, the Christian, however, bears it in hope, knowing that through Christ, suffering is not without meaning, but becomes a means of grace. God's grace is poured into these places of hurt, into these places of deep fracture within all of our souls. And God's blessing lives there, telling you that you're not alone, telling you that you're loved and that you're healed, and that you're a son and daughter of God's. Amen.